Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got up. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn. For the feeling I earn, all my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm a climber with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russell Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I'm Frank in the chat, and I have a trading problem.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I also have a trading problem.
And I am Jeff Blaylock, and I, too, have a trading problem.
Woo! What's up, everybody? Welcome to Session 411 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, where even though the network went away, the DAP's always here to stay. Come on, Jeff. Yeah, there we go. And as you can hear, we have a new guest tonight, someone whose content I followed for quite a while now, and we're very honored to have him. It is Jeff Blaylock. Jeff, how are you tonight?
I'm very good. How are you guys? You guys
excellent.
Look chipper and happy this evening?
Absolutely. How could you not? It's like 70 degrees outside.
I was just going to say, that's what I'm happy about.
You're in Albuquerque, so I'm sure it's been warmer for you for a while. But it's
been unseasonably warm, yes. It's cooler and cloudier today, but it didn't rain, which is what happens when the humidity is only about 20%, which it has been lately. But maybe it'll rain soon.
Yes, absolutely. And how could you not be excited? We're like 3 weeks from the draft. It's a very exciting time. But before we get into that, Jeff, why don't you tell everyone who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do?
Sure. So I'm Jeff. I am over at Football Guys, where I do dynasty rankings and dynasty content. I'm also the dynasty projections guy. And then you can also find me on the Twitters at my name, because I am dumb enough to use my actual name as my handle, at Jeff Blaylock. Over on the Blue Sky and the Instagram and those kinds of things. And then I also host a podcast called Dynasty Compass, which you can find on YouTube, your favorite podcasting platform, or on the web at dynastycompass.com.
Yes. Football Guys has two very smart Jeff B's, and yes, we have one of them tonight, and we'll have
another the other one
in a couple of weeks.
Yes, I am the other one, which I got in our Discord community, because if you guys are familiar with Discord, or anyone watching or listening is, as you're typing, it will say your first initial, your first name and last initial, yep, is typing. And on at least six occasions, I had people express their disappointment that I wasn't Jeff Bell answering their question.
Well, we're happy to have you, Jeff, so don't worry about it. We always have an interview for our first-time guest. So how long have you been playing fantasy for?
About a decade, I would say. You know, COVID came along and kind of ruined my sense of timing. So I will say, though, I resisted it for a long time because I knew I would obsess over it, and I wasn't sure that obsessing over something was really good for me. But one time a friend asked me, he said, "Hey, we got our draft tomorrow. We got an open spot. Can you do this?" And I'm like, "Sure." And I've never been writer about anything than I was that I would obsess over fantasy football. So it kind of began there. And as for Dynasty, yeah, 5, 6, 7 years, something in okay there. And COVID kind of messed up my sense of timing. But
yes,
had it long enough to taste victory, defeat, rebuilds, orphans, all of it.
Good. And in that time span, what's some of the best trades you've made?
Well, I was thinking about this because, there's a number of ways to approach it, but I think just sometimes it's stringing trades together, even if it's not part of a master plan. There's just things you get in a trade that you're able to flip for other things. And so this began in around 2023. It was in a rebuild, a little bit ahead of schedule, and I had an old roster, and I was really trying to turn it into some draft capital, some high upside youth. And I was willing to part with my stars because I thought, this is still a rebuild. I'm not going to have these older guys when I'm finally competitive. So let me trade them, see what I can get. So I sent Derrick Henry and a third For George Pickens, Brock Purdy, and a first-round pick for 2024. Holy
cow. Sorry, what year was this?
Now, keep in mind that this is when George Pickens was in the doghouse with Mike Tomlin. So he was still a head case. He was still very erratic. But I saw a lot of upside there. I watched Purdy a lot, being a Big 12 guy with TCU, so I liked the way that he played and processed. First round picks are always valuable, no matter where they happen to fall. Well, it ended up falling at 102 is where that pick wound up. So that was helpful.
Holy cow!
But I also had a guy come at me, and he wanted Alexander Mattison for reasons that I can't fathom, and he offered me a 2024 second for him, which I took. That became the 205, and. You know, Pickens had this otherworldly playoff run for the fantasy playoffs that year. I mean, he had like 200 yards and 2 touchdowns and I think the fantasy semifinals and put up another 130 yards or so in the finals. And so I actually ended up winning that league that year out of the 6th spot, just completely almost by accident. So as I said, the rebuild's ahead of schedule. Yep. And Henry was good, but he had, I think, 10 yards in his playoff game that year for fantasy managers. If that's too soon for anybody, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to trigger you on that. I know that probably still stings.
Yeah.
That 102 I got from the Henry deal and that 205 from the Madison deal, I flipped into 4 picks, 105, 106, 110, 310. And then I sent that 1010 off for the 202 in a 2027 first. I drafted Brian Thomas, Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, and Bucky Irving. So the net out of all of this was I sent away Derrick Henry, Alexander Mattison, and what became the 312 for George Pickens, Brock Purdy, Brian Thomas Jr., Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, Bucky Irving, and a 2027 first. That's the best trades I've ever made.
Yep, I can see why. And it's always fun when you net it out like that, right? Yeah. That's great. Wow.
I was proud of those. That worked.
Yeah.
And the best part for me was that the other managers all thought they were getting good parts of the deal.
Of course.
And at the time, some of those looked like really bad mistakes by me. But, you know, looking at it from now, like, that was quite the haul I got for Derrick Henry and Alexander Mattison.
I feel bad asking you about your worst trades because I feel like you probably don't have any. If you
I try to have a short memory for stuff like bad trades because I just find it's just not useful to relitigate the past when you make a mistake. But one of them I can't get over, and it was also 2023. I was on the clock, third round. I was on the edge of contention, so really just kind of I had a good starting lineup. I just needed to bolster the bench so that if I had somebody hurt, I could get somebody on the bench to play well. And that was the year that Aaron Rodgers had just signed with the Jets. They just got Alan Lazard over for a big contract. So I'm thinking, all right, so this is somebody who he's not a high upside, but he might give me 8, 10, 12 points when I need him. And that's better than probably just some random third round rookie kind of guy. So I went ahead and traded that pick. I was looking at a couple of players and opted to go with this Lazard trade instead. One of those players was Puka Nacua.
Oh.
Which the guy who traded me for my pick didn't take either. He went 2 picks later than that. So that's the one, man. I knew I should have – something in my heart said you need to take the chance on Puka. I didn't, and – that's the one I remember as the worst trade I've ever made. It probably isn't the worst trade I've ever made, but it feels like it.
Yes. So one guiding principle is listen to your heart. And then what's your other guiding principle?
As usual, I can't just do one thing. So yeah. I think one of them is that, a trade really needs to move the needle in a strategic direction that I'm trying to go in, which is a lesson that got put in place by that 2023 trade because Lazard wasn't moving any needles. And so I shouldn't have made the trade on that basis alone. But I also like the idea that, if you can be flexible in your rookie drafts, if you know where the player tiers and the draft tiers are, and you're willing to trade down within that, if you're willing to give up some of that certainty of getting the guy that you have an eye on and you're willing to take some others, then you get a lot of value for that. However, if you want to trade up to get a specific guy, that's going to cost you. And so I really like to try to be as flexible as I can, trade down where it makes sense, add some more value, and then end up with the guy I was going to take at the higher draft spot if I had kept that original pick.
I like that. I'm a trade down guy myself. So I've always been a fan of taking two bites at the apple. So, all right. Well, I brought the drops back, so we're going to keep bringing them back. It is time for
the news.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian Haar. We're going to start with the 49ers. They're hopeful Kittle is ready for week one. So before I get into this, there was the coaches meetings are in Arizona right now. Is that what they're all there for? So
the owners meetings. Yeah.
Owners meetings. That's it. So there's going to be a lot of kind of whispers and stuff going on the next couple of days. So I kind of grabbed just a couple, but Shanahan said they're hopeful for Kittle to be ready for week one. So they're also, I wanted to put this on there. They've literally hired scientists to investigate the substation phenomenon that they have going on. So I thought that was funny. But Jeff, what are you paying for Kittle now or for Tonjes? Let's say you have Kittle but no Tonjes, or Tonjes but no Kittle. You want to have the San Francisco team tight end, right? Like you would a team quarterback or something like that. You know you have them both. So what would you pay for either one?
If I have Kittle, I would like to pick up Tonjes, and I would hope that that's not terribly expensive, because as a standalone asset, Tonjes does not have a lot of value. If Kittle is indeed back for week one or week four or whatever it is, Tonjes is going to be relegated to somebody you can't even put into a flex. He's somebody you can't rely on for much of anything. So I would hope to be able to get someone like Tonjes for either, you know, like a second round or third round pick, excuse me, you know, or like a backup running back kind of situation. If I'm relatively rich in the running back room and they might need a running back. If I have Tonjes, I am not pursuing Kittle. I don't want to pay for that. I have Kittle, at least in dynasty terms. I've got him as my tight end 16, and that feels too high for me, but I can't in good conscience put any of the next 10 guys in front of him. So 16 is where he has landed for me. So to me, if I'm going to pursue a tight end, I'd rather go after Isaiah Likely at this point, as he goes to the New York Giants, or just not spend the money on someone like Kittle and take chances on some of the younger guys who are developing and maybe something here in a few years.
Yep. Before I throw it to Rocky, would you trade, if you're the reigning champion, would you trade the 212 for Kittle?
If I'm the reigning champion, yes.
I'm sorry, for Tonjes. For Tonjes.
If I had Kittle, yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. To me, 212 and the third round is all about the same. So yeah, that there's nothing magical between 212 and 301.
They're it the has same a two.
Pick. There's the same pick. They're just on different sides of the draft board, but they're essentially the same pick. So yeah.
Rocky, same question.
But there is something magical between the 112 and the 201 because of the one to a lot of people. Yes. But I pretty much agree with Jeff. I'm not really interested in buying Kittle either. I mean, between the age, the injury, it's just too much of a risk at this point. I mean, maybe for a mid to late second, but I don't think people are going to sell Kittle for a mid to late second. Maybe if they're rebuilding, but that's about it. And they're stuck with him on their roster. I think at that point, the Kittle manager is just going to hold them and see what happens. So, Tonjes, I would.
He's going to score. We've seen it. Yeah, he's going to score points. Yeah,
I think it's probably just slightly below Kittle. Like basically what Jeff said, late second, early third. I think about it. I wouldn't feel the need to get one if I have the other either, though. Like either way, like I don't feel like if I have Tonjes, I need Kittle or vice versa. I would just go probably grab a different tight end or something. I don't know. Yeah. That might have longer term. Like we don't know that Tonjes is necessarily Kittle's successor either, right, even if Kittle's done. So. I would just try and find another cheap tight end that I could hopefully get like 10 to 12 points out of tight end premium. So basically in the same range that Jeff has.
Yep. I agree with all of that. I wouldn't go after Kittle. I would pay something super late for Tonjes. And if I already have Kittle, I'm probably holding. Cause I just, you can get more later if he comes back and he's healthy.
Exactly.
Okay. Saints plan to keep Alvin Kamara. I didn't want this. Alongside Travis Etienne. So
I refuse to call him that, by the way.
I know. I'm going to only because I can hear Zach Reed yelling at me.
He's always going to be Travis Etienne.
I know. I can hear people yelling at me for messing up his name, especially people who care about pronunciation.
But at least those one of people us are to. Morons, so I'm okay with it.
So on that, what are we doing with Kamara and Etienne? Are we, Jeff, are we knocking Etienne's value down, or were you already kind of baking this into his value?
I was already baking it in. I figured that they had the opportunity, they being the Saints, to trade Alvin Kamara or move him last year and chose not to do that, even though they could have gotten a cheaper option. And they, to me, are sort of straddling a weird kind of line that's hard to manage, which is rebuilding while trying to actually win games at the same time. That never really works out well for anybody in particular, but that does seem to be kind of what they're doing here. I liked ETN going over there. And if I were to just look at what I thought ETN was going to be in Jacksonville alongside, you know, Bashaul Tutin and LaQuint Allen, and then what he looks like now alongside Kamara and Neal, I like him better now. I'd like him a lot better if Kamara were somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But that's not the hand we're currently dealt. But that also doesn't mean that Kamara won't be somewhere else before the season either starts or ends. And I think we tend to latch on to things right now as being a permanence that clearly is not there. And whether it's this running back situation here in New Orleans or a committee situation somewhere else or a wide receiver who looks like he's blocked. I mean, if Dallas drafts Mekhi Lemon or Carnell Tate, I can just see dynasty managers wringing their hands over, well, Tate's kneecapped by this. He's not going to reach his potential. It's like today, but Pickens may move on. They
look at Ibuka
franchising a second time. So let's let this play out a little bit. So I wouldn't be eager to get Kamara at all. I would trade for ETN, but I with this sort of idea that we need to see some more pieces move before ETN can be anywhere near his potential. Still, though, decent, you know, RB2 kind of and certainly flex play kind of back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kamara, I'm trying to get rid of for whatever I can get, basically, at this point. I don't care about
I assume ports. You're attacking the ETN manager with those?
Yeah, probably. If I can get a third for him, I would absolutely do that. Like, I just don't see much upside in having him on your roster at this point. Even if you're contending, like, I'm not really sure how often you really start in Kamara at this point. And ETN, I've never been as – and I'm going to keep calling him ETN – I've never been as big a fan as you have been. He's probably more like a wait and see for me. If I want to buy him, I'll buy him in season when I see how it goes. He's not someone I'd probably be looking to get during the non-point scoring season with the new team. Not really sure what everything's going to look like there. You know, Shuck has looked nice, but he could really, you know, year two tape on him, he could struggle. The offense could be a disaster for all we know. He's a wait and see for me.
Mm-hmm. I think especially if the Saints take a receiver at 9, I think they're at 9, and they've been mocked Tyson a bunch of times, that would be great to go with Olave, kind of another big guy. But that would make ETN more attractive for me. And I just struggle with this because – and Rocky, by the way, I'm the ETN owner in TA6, and the answer is no. I don't have any picks, so I don't have any – I'm not taking Kamara. I gave them all to J. Mike as he won another title. But I wouldn't – I think the value is baked in for Kamara to be there. I don't think he's going to be taking – I think the carry split will lean towards ETN. There. I don't think it'll be Kamara out carrying him, and if he is, we have a lot bigger problems.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're counting on rationality here. That may not be what actually happens. So we may be quite stunned at what happens there in New Orleans. But I do see that because Kamara is still capable of some really, you know, productive days if he has that opportunity. He's just not what he used to be, but I mean, who is at this point, right? Even ETN has got a little wear and tear on him from his seasons in Jacksonville.
Yes. And short of having Saquon Barkley, who ran for like 4,000 yards his one time he was there in Philly, Kellen Moore likes to use multiple backs. He always has. Yeah. So this makes sense.
And I think that's going to be a trend we're going to see a lot more of here in the NFL, that the workhorse
is dead.
I wouldn't say they're dead, but they're definitely trying to find pastures for some of them. So I would take more Pony Express and less long-term their long-term horse runs. And forgive my puppies in the background.
No, it's okay. We're a pet and family-friendly show, as always.
Pro-puppy podcast.
Yes, exactly. Jonathan Brooks is expected to be ready for OTAs. He will be fully good to go. Rocky, I'll let you start. So you and I have been up and down on Jonathan Brooks the last couple of years. He keeps getting hurt, but sounds like he's going to be there with no Dowdle to sit in front of him and only Chuba to go against. So are we back in?
Also wait and see for me. I cannot be back on a guy that's been hurt as much as he has and yes. Major knee injuries.
Like, why? You like Dobbins?
Yeah, but Dobbins has done something in the NFL when I like
I know.
Okay. Right. Before and after his injury.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no it's been like forever since he played a full season. Yeah. So going back to college. So I consider throwing a third at him, maybe mid to late third. Like, I feel like he could be just a complete giant nothing. I really liked him coming out, mm-hmm. but I got to see it to believe it. I don't feel compelled to even try and acquire him until I see him on the field.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I think I'm in that same boat. And if I have him, I'm keeping him because I don't yes. want to give him away for what I would offer myself for him. And then I'm not going to offer anything more than that to anybody else. So mm-hmm. Unless somebody just really wants out of Jonathan Brooks, I think he's going to be kind of stuck at wherever he is on a lot of rosters until he starts doing something. I think Dowdle leaving Carolina doesn't really open things up necessarily for Brooks as much as it just means Hubbard is going to be – you know, a guy that's under the radar and potential league winner is a really strong word here, but certainly somebody who can carry a lot of load for teams for a season or two. They're his team that they've committed to him. Mm-hmm. I like him better, I think, than consensus does. So to me, the Brooks has to overcome his injury and Chuba Hubbard at the same time. And then there's another ETN sitting back there too.
Yes.
I think they've got AJ Dillon as well and another cast of characters. So, you know, I hope Brooks does really well. I liked him coming out of college, too, and I really hate to see kids with that much potential get their career derailed by persistent injuries. So I'm hopeful that he can be everything we wanted him to be. But I'm with you, Rocky. I got to see it before I'll pay for it.
Yep. Yeah. They actually have an out in Chuba's contract. Has anyone seen anything with, are they just keeping him? Have they said anything? I haven't seen any sort of like, we're not, anything. I haven't seen any whispers that they're cutting him and saving right. some money because they could easily draft a guy too, right?
There's they could.
A running back's coming and
it's another case of things can change a lot very quickly mm-hmm. in the NFL. Right now he's the guy. If they draft a running back they fall in love with, he may not be the guy anymore.
Right. It will be interesting. I think if you look at it, Brooks is clearly very talented. He's it's the same case as Dobbins. I know Dobbins played more and all that, but it's the same case. The talent is clearly there. He needs to just stay healthy and he could win you some stuff if you're willing to give a late third or a mid third for Brooks right now and roll the dice. But you could also, as Rocky said, get left with nothing. So it's really about your risk tolerance.
If you're using that third to draft a running back, your odds of getting nothing are also about the same. So, you know,
exactly. Exactly that. In the minor news, Steelers expect to know Rodgers' decision before the draft, and I have to say,
that's a lie!
Yep, they're not going to know that. And Rams are looking at Jimmy G and Kirk Cousins as a backup. They've known about Rodgers' decision before the draft the last 3 years, so I don't think
right. anyone actually knows. Yeah, it would be nice of him to tell them before the draft, but no that chance. Would also end his leverage, whatever it might be. So yep. I think he needs to hang on to that. Maybe.
Yes. I would love Kirk Cousins in Los Angeles, by the way, just sitting behind Stafford. And yep. he'll be able to do better, but he would get a ring there probably. Yep. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, Jeff, just getting into some rookie stuff. Like I said, we have a couple weeks till the draft, so I've laid out a couple rookie questions. So mm-hmm. I've asked this of our last couple of guests. Who's your guy this year? You're not leaving the draft without this person. And some people have said Malachi Fields. Our two guests last week said Jeremy Bernard and Chris Brooks or Chris Bell. I keep doing that. Chris Brooks is someone different.
Brooks is in Green Bay. I have a lot of him. I like him. But Matt Waldman loves him. And so yes. Matt Waldman loves somebody. I do too. So I have lots of Chris Brooks, and I keep waiting for something to happen.
I keep doing that. But who's your guy this year in this draft?
So, I said flexibility is important. So it's obviously not somebody in the first round that I'm going to want here. But I really am enamored with and someone I think I can get in the third round at wherever I may be picking in it. And that's Jacoby Lane. I mean, he's young. He's, of course, all college kids are young, but he's particularly young. He's big. He blocks well. He's great in space, good in the zone. And one of the things that impresses me about him is that he really can box out defenders on jump balls and contested catches. It's almost like he's rebounding, like he's a basketball player trying to rebound. And so this to me is the kind of definition of low cost, high upside kind of player. There's a great chance he amounts to nothing. And then there's a chance that he is, somebody who I don't ever see as my wide receiver one or two, but if he's my third or fourth flex and can routinely get me 8 to 10 points and every once in a while I'll get me 20, I'm thrilled with that.
Yep. For those who do not know who Jacoby Lane is, 6'4", 200. He's a big, lanky boy, but he can go and get a ball. He played at USC, which is obviously the Lincoln Riley system, so he knows how to play offense, clearly. So Lincoln Riley has had a lot of success with offensive development in his years, and I would imagine Lane will be no different. Who is your RB2? Obviously, Love is the cream of the crop this year. He's standing miles above everyone else. Who is your RB2?
That kind of depends on the day of the week. So this is Tuesday, and so we're going to go with Mike.
It's 60 degrees outside.
It's Tuesday. It's about 61 degrees. There's a 30% chance of rain, which in New Mexico means it's not going to rain. And so it is Mike Washington because someone has to be my RB2. I do love, if I could say anything about him that distinguishes him from other folks, he is really smooth going from the catch point to running with the ball. And in PPR formats, that's really important. That's something that you want to see is a running back who can do those kinds of things. I think he is moving up the board. He's getting buzzier. And he may become a lot of people's RB2s here pretty soon. So it's kind of a chalky answer. But honestly, if you asked me this question yesterday, I would have told you somebody else. And tomorrow, there's a good chance I will tell you somebody other than those two.
Yep. Back to Jadarian Price tomorrow.
No, well, I don't think so, but maybe. He was my early flavor of that. But I don't know that I'll get back to there. But we'll see.
Yes, that's fair.
Depends on where he's drafted.
Yes. Who is your favorite wide receiver outside the big three of Tate, Tyson, and Lemon?
There's a whole kind of cluster there that I could go with. And, like Casey Concepcion is one of those kinds of guys that really kind of depends on where he lands, because I could see him being a really well-used weapon and I could see him disappearing completely. So I'm going to use favorite here as more of the story of the player and who I might be rooting for. And that's going to be Ted Hurst, who comes out of Georgia Southern. He's tall. He's long. He's a great deep ball threat. I mean, the dude was fourth in receiving in the FBS, playing for a team that went 1-11. And he can stick a break in the ground and turn a direction in a heartbeat in a way that leaves defenders just looking at him. So if there's somebody if I can use favorite in terms of who am I cheering for? Yeah, I think Hurst is going to be one of those guys for me this year.
Yep. Rocky, that's two Ted Hursts in 2 weeks. We might have to start paying attention.
I know.
Okay, last question. If you have a mid to late first in the rookie draft this year, would you rather trade up or trade down?
Down, always down. Down.
I kind of
feel down or out here in this case. Yeah. Yeah, if I can't get Love or one of those three receivers because I'm already there, I'm probably not participating in this first round this year.
So no Sadiq for you because he's kind of right there.
Not at that price point, man. If 106, 107, that's a lot for a guy who I think we're looking at him. And if you're going for ceiling, fine. I mean, he's got sky high ceiling. He's athletic as all get out, but he doesn't block really well. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of important if you're a tight end, because if you're going to be on the field all the time, you need to be able to do that, because you're not always the guy who's the receiver. You are you're a part of an offense, not the offense. And so when I look at someone like Steak, I don't see a focal point of the offense as much as I see a piece of an offense. And I don't know that I want to spend that kind of draft capital at this point for him. What I'd rather see from a dynasty perspective, I'm not saying this from a player perspective, because obviously I want everybody to succeed. So I don't want any ill will to any players. But what I'd like to see is sort of this season where he is not what everyone thinks he's going to be, and I can pick him up in a trade a year from now for a lot less than the 106 or 107.
The blocking never made sense to me because Oregon and Lanning's scheme is inherently run heavy. So you would think he would have had to learn to be as successful as he was at Oregon, but it never really made sense to me. Okay. For the next section, we usually have the guest choose. Would you like to do trade X trades or listener questions first?
Let's do the trades.
All right, it's time for
Trade Addicts Trade.
And Trade Addicts Leagues are 12-team Superflex PPR tight end premium with 1.75 per tire reception, 0.05 per turn yard, and all leagues except TA1 because they'll never break, they always hold. And we start in TA4. We have some big ones this week, Rocky. Holy cow.
They're all in TA4, too.
Yeah.
Oh, TA4 yeah, was
none
busy.
Of these one player for one player kinds of trades anymore. No. This is an engineer.
They got crazy this week. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what was in the water in TA4.
Yeah. We start off with Marvin Harrison Jr., AJ Barner, and 227 first. Golly, for the 101, Ricky Pearsall, and the always present Matthew Golden, who I feel like has been traded 3 times in 3 weeks.
I will say, for some minor context, the 227 firsts I looked are from the teams that finished first and third last year.
So contending, very contending.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, we go yes, right in a year, yeah. But yes.
Okay, so Jeff, what do you think about this?
Well, I'm trying to decide if it's a super hard no or just no on sending away Harrison and those firsts for the 101. And part of that's going to depend on what was I going to do with 101. And if I'm going for Jeremiah Love and I'm looking for a home run hitting kind of a running back and I'm willing to spend that kind of draft capital for it, then that might be worth this. I think Pearsall, with Mike Evans now in town, might actually be freed up to be who he needs to be rather than trying to be the guy. And Golden I've always liked. I mean, I still see some potential there. I still remember him on draft night spending a lot of time there in Green Bay with the fans, taking pictures, looking like he really wanted to be there. So he's somebody I like. But, man, it's tough to – turn down Harrison, you know, Barner, kind of a potential sleeper and a tight end. Mm-hmm. And those 227 firsts might be 10 and 12 this year, but by that point, they might be 2 and 3 or 3 and 5 or 4 and 7. Yeah. And if I have another one of those, you have 3 in the bank, that gives you a lot of flexibility that even if they are 110 and 112, you can put those two together and move up if there's somebody you really want there. So I'm not inclined to give up all that draft capital for a Jadarian Price, and I'm definitely not willing to do it for Mendoza if that's what I'm trying to do with 101. And I said I like Pearsall and Golden, but I think I can get either one of them for presumably cheaper than that. And maybe not in this particular league, but elsewhere.
Yes.
Yeah, to me, this is pretty easily the Harrison Barner first side. I almost want to say it's one first too many for me. It's pretty close to that especially with the way everyone's talking about the 27 class too. Even if those are later first, they're not going to be worth more than the 101. But I mean, that alone might be worth the 101, depending, you know, where those end up falling. Yeah. And I've never been the biggest Harrison guy, but I still like him a lot more than Ricky Pearsall and Matthew Golden.
Yeah.
Barner's, you know, had a nice little start to his career too. I don't think he's just a nothing in this deal either.
Yeah.
So I guess if you really love, maybe I can see it, but like, I don't know. I feel you're giving up way too much. I feel like you could have gotten the 101 cheaper, and I don't really care that much about the ancillary pieces that he's adding to the 101.
Yeah. 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 It just on Barner. I mean, I have him as my tight end 24 right now, but I could put him anywhere really, but after Kittle and be satisfied with that placement. So he is definitely somebody I've got my eye on as a sleeper and a rising star potentially there at tight end. So he's not one I really want to give up either for that particular package.
Yeah, and a lot of tight ends, it does take 2 to 3 to 4 years if they're not like the super studs coming out to really develop. Yeah.
Especially if Cup leaves. If Cup's cut or gone or whatever, I doubt he is, but if they get rid of him.
Will eventually.
Right. I know it's Barner's only 23, which blows my mind. It feels like he's been in the league for 4 years, but he's only 23. All right. I agree with you guys on the Harrison side, but I'm going to try and make the case for why you would do this because we need to touch on both sides.
Sure.
You are a contending, you just won the title or you just barely missed it. You are pretty good at receiver on the top end. And you need a running back, and the running back is the solidifying piece, because that's how you get there here. Because you get rid of Harrison, and split that into Pearsall and Golden. Which, if I were to chop this up, I would say Harrison for Pearsall and Golden straight up, and then Barner in the two firsts for the 101, which probably isn't enough value, just like that. But I think that's how you would get there, is one of these guys is clearly rebuilding and one is contending, and the guy who gave the 101 away is not ready for, by the way, I'm making all this up. I have no idea if any of this is true.
Yep.
Is not ready to compete, is not a Jeremiah Love away. So they're re-rolling for 27 with Harrison, hoping he has another step forward. You can trade him for another 27 first. And then that's how you get everyone happy on this. That's how I would get there. And I think if you're the guy walking away with the 101, I highly doubt this would be for Mendoza. I can't imagine this would, that wouldn't make sense to me. No, this has to be for Love.
But see, so, even in your scenario, I'm thinking, can I get a very high-end running back from Marvin Harrison in a 27 first or something like that, rather than giving all this up to get the 101 and some long shot receivers?
Well, now I'm going to test you. So would you give away James Cook for that?
If I'm rebuilding, I think I would, yeah.
Marvin Harrison in a 27 first. Jeff, same question. James Cook.
James Cook for Harrison in the
27 first? And a 27 first. Call it the
just one of them or both of them?
Just one.
Oh,
if you're rebuilding,
no. Yeah. I'd want to deploy Cook a little better than that. I think I can get better value than that from either this guy who is a contender in the first position, or his arch rival might be another place I can offload Cook if I were looking to do that. So I don't know that I'd do that here for Harrison.
Here's one more name, because his offense just got really bad. Would you trade Achan for that? Knowing you could cut bait free and clear and get Harrison in a 27 first, and you're out of the Dolphins.
I would entertain it, but I mean, Achan's my RB4. Because of course I'm not looking just at this season. This season may be an absolute disaster, but he's still, you know, Devon Etienne. So, you know, he's going to be someone to reckon with. And, you know, I guess, you know, for me, it's like, well, is, you know, I don't know if this 101 is still in play here, but it's like him or Jadarian Price. I'd rather just stick with Achan at this point, even not knowing, you know, landing spots or not knowing if Miami will ever be a functioning offense again. You know, in terms of Harrison, you know, where do I have Marvin Harrison Jr.?
For the sake of the listener, while he's looking, he means Jeremiah.
Yeah, I'm looking at my rankings. Yes.
Price.
Yes. Yeah. And then, okay, very good. And Harrison's my wide receiver 27. So I've got him below, you know, Jalen Waddle and Rashee Rice and Devontae Smith. So he's one of a number of people that fall kind of in that block for me if I'm looking to acquire a receiver that might actually prefer like someone like maybe a Wandale Robinson or one of these rookies, Tate or Lemon, than Harrison. I mean, we've seen what Harrison is. I think he's better than that, but he also might just be that.
Mm-hmm. All right, we broke that one down to a fine powder. Hopefully the two people understand that one. Okay. It's now my turn for my dog to start barking. There she goes. We have Travis ETN-HN for Garrett Wilson, Derrick Henry, and Jameson Williams for Bijan, Woody Marks, Juwan Jennings, and Rashid Shaheed. I will do that again. It's ETN, Garrett Wilson, Derrick Henry, and Jameson Williams for Bijan, Woody, Juwan Jennings, and Shaheed.
And you said that return points are counting here, right?
Yes, 0.05 per return yard. Yep.
Okay, so Shaheed, that's you're a right. significant Shaheed thing for points. Shaheed.
Yes, yeah, that's 100%.
Significant for Shaheed.
This
is such actually a weird trade.
It is.
Yeah, I personally have difficulty with trades where I'm swapping the one position for the same position. I feel like that's kind of what's going on here as I'm trying to parse this out. You've got on the running back side, you have ETN and Henry for Bijan Robinson and Woody Marks. And I think that that side is probably a little bit better for the Bijan side with those four together. Marks, I'm not convinced he's going to be great, but I mean, he dude was a fifth round pick, right? So anything's
good. Well, Monty's there now too.
And Monty's there too. Yep. So, you know, there's pecking order there. Doesn't mean that Marks isn't going to be a solid flex play in certain situations, but he's never going to be your RB1 or RB2 unless you're a really bad team. And then on the receiver side, so Garrett Wilson, who is, you know, in that fantasy wasteland called the Jets, and then Jameson Williams, who is anything from the wide receiver one overall to someone who doesn't show up in the box score in a given week. But I still prefer those guys to Juwan Jennings and Rashid Shaheed, even in this kind of kick return league, which I love. I love kick return leagues, by the way, so I'm glad you guys do that. How much do you want Bijan, right? I mean, that's really kind of it. Isn't that the crux of this here? Because I'm willing to trade away all four of those other guys, ETN, Wilson, Henry, and Williams. But do I love Bijan that much to take on those other guys for all of that? And I think the answer is no, but that would kind of depend on the rest of the roster situation.
Sorry, just to clear that up, you said you would give those four players just for Bijan alone?
No, I would not. I said, what I'm saying though is that this trade is real to the way I'm looking at it is this trade is about how much do you want Bijan?
Because
you are giving up those four players for him and these other guys, but the other guys to me are not needle movers in the way that say Wilson or Williams might be.
Yeah.
So it comes down to where do you value Bijan in the grand scheme of things? If he's your RB1 and you think Derrick Henry's cooked and you think Garrett Wilson is stuck on a team with no quarterback forever, it looks like a better trade on the Bijan side in that case. If you're looking more at ceilings and potential, I'd have trouble. Well, yeah, I'd have trouble moving off of Wilson and Williams for the Bijan trade. I might want something. I would probably want to take Woody Marks out of that equation and drop in a different position, like a tight end or something like that, that bolsters somewhere else.
Yes.
Otherwise, this is a straight up two running backs, two wide receivers for two running backs and two wide receivers. And I don't know that the needle moves enough for just that in my mind.
I looked at this for a long time, and I basically came down on.
Is I this do agree you? With the,
no.
Oh.
No, I just mean when I saw it when I put this on the sheet.
Oh, I see.
Because there's so much going on here. And it basically, I just decided if I have to pick a side here, basically, I don't love giving up all these guys, but I do think I lean the Bijan side just because I'm getting the best player and there's no question mark there. Like, I have question marks about every single player on the other side of that deal. Like Jeff said, Derrick Henry could be the year he finally falls off. Jameson Williams is a question mark from game to game, as Jeff also said. Garrett Wilson, quarterback issues, and Travis Etienne, new team. So I agree. I would prefer to try and sub out at least one of those other three pieces for something else. Juwan Jennings could be a nice little flex piece for you. depending on the 49ers pass catching situation. But Woody Marks, I'm not a big fan of either. And Shaheed, even with the return potential return points, they're not huge in this league. There are some, but it's not huge. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't move the needle at all for me. So it is mostly that just for Bijan, and maybe if you like Juwan Jennings a little bit. But I still think I just lean I'll take the best player. And I mean, you have to have a pretty nice roster to give away all these guys. So obviously that I'm factoring that. I'm assuming if he was willing to do this, or he or she was willing to do this, that they probably have a lot of like startable players. So yeah. I'll take the upgrade. And again, I don't think it's like easily that side, but I'm just leaning that way just because I'm getting the one player that's a stud with no question marks.
I mean, looking at it, it's like Frank was doing in the previous trade, trying to justify how does this become a really good deal for the side giving up Wilson and Williams. It's because you are already stacked at wide receiver, and neither of these guys is your top guy, in which case you are giving up some things you're strong for players that are okay and can come in off the bench and help you when you need them, but you're not really probably starting Jennings or Shaheed. But in the meantime, you are giving up an aging back and a question mark for the RB1. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is if that's the circumstances I find myself in as a contending team, I think this is actually a pretty good deal to get Bijan. But I need for Wilson and Williams to not be my wide receiver 2 and wide receiver 3, because I'm not replacing those with Jennings and Sheed.
Yep. I like this trade a lot, giving away Bijan, especially if you're rebuilding, because here's why. You are giving away the RB1 and getting 4 startable players. You're not like assuming you're not using Bijan to win titles. Mm-hmm. You could then turn around and strip this trade for parts pretty dang fast.
Yep.
And you could turn all 4 of these into picks.
Yep.
Where
with those guys,
the picks that you could get for Garrett Wilson, J-Mo, ETN, Henry separately, someone might not have all on their team to give Bijan and every, like, you could strip this down pretty fast. Mm-hmm. And it's a good way to kind of trigger your rebuild, is to give the RB1 away for these pieces. Or if you want to hold Garrett Wilson and J-Mo, they're like 23 and 24 respectively. So you're more than welcome to do that, but you could at least sell the running backs off. So that's why, I mean, we don't know where Jennings is going to be yet. Jennings is still a free agent, which is shocking to me, by the way. And I don't know what people aren't seeing with him, but maybe they're just waiting for the draft.
I think it's what they are seeing with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think there's anything hidden here. I think he's good, but is he worth the trouble that's going to be?
Yeah. Which stinks, because he took a bet on himself and it doesn't appear to be paying off right now.
No.
But that's how I would sell this to myself. You're giving away a couple veteran pieces and Bijan to trigger your rebuild into something you could strip for parts a lot easier. And that's how I would do that. Okay. Last one, the 108, the 208, a 27 first and a 27 third for, oh my God, for CJ Stroud, Michael Penix, Bucky Irving, Trey Tucker, the 301, the 401 and the 27 fourth. Cause those just had to be there. So let's take
27 fourth sounds like a trade calculator.
I know,
issue.
Seriously, it really does. I was 2 points off. So we can strip the fourths off because those aren't worth anything. So the 108, the 208, a 27 first, a 27 third for Stroud, Penix, Bucky, Trey Tucker, and the 301.
Well,
you have some very volatile quarterbacks on that side.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of question marks here, aren't there? Well,
am I weird for saying the 27 first is on the wrong side?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a super flex we're talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So conceivably, 2 starting quarterbacks, certainly 1. With the question marks and the wobbles going on. So you could have 2 starting quarterbacks. Bucky Irving is still pretty good. And Trey Tucker, somebody has to catch the ball in Las Vegas. So, you know, Trey Tucker is sort of an under the radar kind of player. And then the 108, you know, we talked kind of hit around that. And yes, if I had a late to mid late first, what would I do with it? I'd trade down. This is the way I'm doing that. And then the 208 is, you know, already in dart throw territory. The 27 first, I don't know. I mean, I guess the thing is for me is if this is a contender trying to trade off some draft picks and make the next move, I don't know this player package is what's going to do that, because I don't have that much faith in Stroud or Penix, unless Stroud is your QB2 and Penix is the guy who's going to come in when your QB1 goes down or is an injury or something like that, and you're bolstering that QB room, because QBs are hard to come by in super flex leagues. I like Bucky Irving. There's some question marks there. Tucker, as I said, it's kind of a mystery. I think he's under the radar, but a bit of a mystery box in terms of what that offense is going to look like with Mendoza out there. And then, you know, those draft picks, 301, it's a great thing to throw in, but it looks like it's already there, so I can't ask for it again because it's already in there. And the fourth is, as Rocky noted, or ballast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is another weird one. I do think the picks are fine. Like, I do think Stroud and Irving are both worth a first. So I think there needs to be two firsts on that.
A 27 first?
That's what I don't know. But yeah. Just because of the way we're valuing the 27 class.
Yeah. Oh, you're saying they're both worth a first each?
Yes.
I think the industry would disagree with you on Bucky at this point.
Really?
That. Yeah. People are getting really scared of Bucky.
Okay. Well, in my head, he's worth a first.
Not I agree with you. First. I think, yeah.
So, and then there's the fact that this class is not supposed to be that good. So do I really, how much do I really care about the 108 and the 208? This is not a trade I would make. I can tell you that on either side of maybe. But I think I lean the players. Yeah. I still like Bucky Irving myself. So that is a value to me. I still am not out on CJ Stroud. I liked him a lot coming out, and then he seemed to validate me in my rookie year, and then it's been a mess since. But I still believe he can. He's never going to be an elite, you know, fantasy quarterback. But I still believe he can be a solid QB two ish, maybe high end QB two. So, I don't love giving up the 27 first, because, like I said, they're going to be like they're apparently like gold now because everyone thinks that 27 class is going to be amazing. But if I have to pick a side here, and I don't really like Penix, but if I had to pick a side, I'll take the players, because everything on the other side besides the 27 first is I don't feel great about. So
I'll take the picks. I wouldn't make this trade either, but I can turn the 108 into the 202 and the 205, and then the 202 into the 204 and the 206, and like I always do, I'm just going to have half the second round by the time I'm done. So that's probably gross, but give me a bunch of shots with Nick Singleton and Zachariah Branch and see what I can turn into. But I wouldn't do this trade either. This is kind of a funky trade. But
Frank, you make a great point about the picks and flipping them, because right now those are all question marks and possibilities and potentialities. Yes. And we know what CJ Stroud and Michael Penix and Bucky Irving are, and we can find out pretty quickly what Trey Tucker is. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about the liquidity of these assets in terms of being able to move them for other things, I think the picks are more flexible than the players are. And so if you're looking to make a deal like this and then turn these players into other things, I think the pick side is the easier path to that than the player side is.
I was just
staring. If you're trading with these players, you're inserting them in your lineup.
Yes. I was just staring at the football guy's rookie rankings, and I'm like, who is 108? And it's like Casey Concepcion. Yeah, right. It's Casey Concepcion. It's
Boston's Allen, probably up there.
Jadarian Price, yeah, Boston.
Allen's. I imagine some of those guys need to update. I think, because Allen shouldn't be that high anymore.
Allen's RB3 on this, but that's probably old. Or Omar Cooper. I mean, like, it just yuck. I'll take more chances at someone else down the line who are probably equally talented.
Yeah.
Okay. Listener question, starting with Trade Addict Superfan, which with how bad the offense is, can you trust any Cleveland wide receiver to be a consistent performer besides Fannin, whether it's one on the team or someone they draft sign, or is that something to avoid? For those who haven't seen, Carnell Tate has been mocked there for quite a while, although they are backing off on him quite a bit, like the mocks are. So it's going to be probably Tate, or I never know how to pronounce his name, Maugoa, the offensive tackle, because they just lost both their tackles. So
yeah,
but
that would be the smarter pick for them, incidentally.
It would, but
this is Cleveland we're talking about.
I was going to say, when has that ever stopped them? So, Penei Sewell should be a Bengal, remember? So, Jeff, what do you think about the question? Can you trust any wide receiver besides Fannin, just based on target load, at least?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out who, you know, which of these guys would it be? You got Jerry Tillman, Judy, right? You got Cedric Tillman, and then some combination of Malachi Corley, Isaiah Bond, Jamari Thrash, Gage Lardavane, Lavredian, Tylan Wallace. I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out because I can't remember some of these
guys. It is certainly those, yeah.
But certainly that. And then let's throw a rookie on there just because we can. And
yes.
Because there's enough rookie wide receivers. They're going to end up with one of them at some point, whether it's in the first round or somewhere else. So, no, I think is the answer. But I don't think it's the quarterback situation that's causing this. It's there's no needle movers in that group. Fannin is it. Judkins is a running back. You know, you're going to have, in all likelihood, Deshaun Watson is the quarterback this year. He is several years removed from any kind of relevance. No faith in Sanders or Gabriel. But to me, the quarterbacking's not the problem with this receiver core. It's the receivers. I don't think this receiving core would be great if you stuck him with anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both, but yeah, I don't want any of those quarterbacks throwing to my receivers if
no.
I'm trying to depend on them.
Yeah. They're not helpful, I'll put it that way, but yeah, I mean, it's yeah. not the problem either. They're just a piece of this problem.
But yeah.
And there's no offensive line, so if you draft a wide receiver, then you haven't fixed the thing that made your quarterbacks crummy in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do still like Fannin. Somehow he was able to produce pretty well in that mess. Yeah. But yeah, it's just something to avoid to answer his question. Yes, I'm avoiding Cleveland entirely outside of Fannin and I guess Judkins.
Mm-hmm. So when I look at, you know, when I'm looking at a bad offense, you know, again, things change. So they're not going to be a bad offense forever, or at least the player won't be on a bad offense forever, even if the offense is bad forever. And I look kind of at what would I be expecting from these guys several in the next 2 to 3 to 4 years. And the only ones I expect anything from are Fannin and Judkins. Mm-hmm. I don't expect anything from these other guys. So that sours me to them. If you put me in a position, say you need one of these Cleveland wide receivers to be your flex guy and occasional starter. All right. I'll take Judy if he's cheap enough.
Yeah.
But that expectation is that's a low bar to get over for you. I mean, he needs to be able to play in my flex spot half the season. It's pretty low.
Before we move on, Roman has a question. Garrett Wilson for the 105 and Jacoby Myers. What more do you need to move Wilson? Not much.
No, honestly. I would. Yeah, now here is the position for the same position kind of trade, but I think the 2-for-1 here makes this worthwhile because I would, with 105, either take whichever of the 3 top rookie receivers is left or flip that pick for some other assets. So I would take that trade. I would send Wilson for those 2.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like I like Wilson a lot, but he's just eternally stuck with the Jets, it seems like. So, and they, you said you're never not necessarily going to be in a bad offense forever, but Garrett Wilson very well may be.
So. I was going to say that about Breece Hall too.
So him and Breece Hall. I mean, eventually these guys have to retire, and so they could well retire as Jets.
Yeah, Roman, I think that's a fine trade. If you want to throw a 3rd on there just to mess with them, go ahead. But that's I don't think you need much more. Okay. Kevin at clearly not Kevin.beastguy.social, so I don't know who he is if he's Kevin and clearly not Kevin. My favorite spring activity is enjoying the nice weather until it snows again up here in Minnesota. I asked your favorite springtime activity. Spring has officially started. Mine's just like going on walks outside again. I live in Chicago. I can't do that very often in the winter. So, Jeff, do you have a favorite like springtime activity? I know it's not very wintry down where you are, but
has it been this year? I mean, we do get winter here. It's just, but this has been an unusually warm and dry winter for us. My favorite spring activity is just, again, yeah, getting outside. It's grilling without having to use lights because I can see because the sun is out. It's all the lots of beautiful flowers here in the desert, wildflowers, and Wells planting the garden, planting our herbs, which I should have done this weekend, but I was busy, so I'm going to do it next weekend. So those are the kinds of the activities, yeah, here for spring for me.
Yeah, I don't really have anything different from you guys. If you look at me, I'm not the most active outside person, like, you know, running and climbing and doing things like that. So, yeah, it's just the warmer weather. Grilling is a great choice there.
I was literally about to say, you're a griller for sure. You can definitely.
I enjoy eating grilled food. I don't really grill that much myself, but yeah, I can if I need to. But
yes. And then his question was, would you rather draft Mendoza or trade the pick back and get a lower tier QB in return? I think this is the one time you don't trade back because there is no QB two, really, unless you.
That's what, if you have to have a QB, but here's the part of this that is a no. Absolutely. Is the lower tier QB in return. I don't want a QB in return for this. If I'm trading this pick, I'm assuming 102 here. Because it's 101, I would take Love or a huge package to get out of that. If it's 102 and it's Mendoza, would I rather have him or would I rather trade for something else and try in 2027 with that class? I would do that, I think, rather than draft Mendoza. But I don't in no world would I trade Mendoza or the opportunity to take Mendoza for a lower tier quarterback in this year's class. That's just not a non-starter for me.
And I thought the same thing, which I was wondering if he meant trade back and get a lower tier NFL QB in return.
I think that's probably the case, but I think even then, what are you doing? Like 108 and Stroud for 101? Is that like, I'm just made that up in my head since we just talked about it, but would you do that?
Instead of Mendoza at 102?
At 102, yeah. Or one
no, well, maybe, but I would really be more interested in where's my quarterback desperate team in this Superflex league, because that's the one I want to target, because they may see Mendoza as either a needle mover or a desperation. I've got to have a regular starter, and he's the one out of this whole class that I can count on.
Yeah, depending on how lower tier we're talking, I don't hate that idea, just because I still have to, you know, I'm not a rookie person, so I just listen to a lot of other people mostly. I try to watch some guys before the draft if I can. And just from what I know of Mendoza, I'm not super sold right now. So I'd rather just take the two for one in that scenario. Again, depending on who the quarterback is and where the pick is. But if that's what he meant, then I don't hate that idea.
Yeah. I'm looking at the football guys' rankings again, and apparently they're a little stale, so I won't read the numbers too closely. But I see Shuck like six spots behind Mendoza. Like, I would do that, but like,
I have him one spot behind Mendoza. I'm looking at my rankings. I've got Shuck at 22 and Mendoza at 21. So if we're talking about lower tier quarterback as being the, you know, who's Shuck, like Jared Goff, Bryce Young, Sam Darnold kind of stuff. Yeah. I would do that in a 108 for the 101 for the Mendoza draft pick in a second. Yeah, that would be an easy yes for me.
I'm not sure I would. I guess it would depend on how much you need a quarterback. But if you're just holding the 101 for the or to your point, the 102 because Love. Yeah, it depends on what you need, but I probably wouldn't. Just, you can always get Mendoza. If he proves himself at all, you can probably gain value.
Yep.
So it's a tough bet. And then Tyler at Tyler FF Creator, I have a very important question. Will you or Rocky consider trading me any more thirds or fourths? No, you're banned from getting those because you turn them into firsts somehow.
Yeah. I just I just never like the offer season. I don't like buying Hunter Henrys and Darnell Mooneys and Jordan Masons, which is what he's offering. Yeah. So
yeah. I just don't do those trades. And but yeah,
if you want them, you're gonna send me a bigger deal and throw a third into it or something.
Yeah, I learned my lesson trading a third for a player. I'm never doing that. There you go. Yeah, into another bigger deal.
All right, let's move into Dynasted's questions. He says, lots of talk about the potential of the 27 rookie class, especially compared to this year, but saw some talk suggesting that none of the QBs are close to Caleb May and May in terms of the profile. Do you think the 27 hype is justified, or is it perhaps overrated at the top?
So the way I'm kind of viewing this, and Frank, I think you said this line earlier in the show of like, you want multiple shots at something. And to me, that's what this 2027 class is. Mm-hmm. There may very well be nobody who is close to Caleb or May as of today, but there's about a dozen guys who I think could be in the, if not the QB1, certainly in that discussion next year, any one of whom might be in the Caleb May realm when we get to a year from now. So to me, the hype to me is not on a particular guy or, oh my God, these three guys are so awesome. I mean, there's a bunch of people who could be that guy. We just don't mm-hmm. see that yet. And of course, you know, the grass is always greener if you're not having to mow it today. So yes. this beautiful field we see next year is always going to be prettier than the one in front of us.
Yes.
So I do think there's a little bit of hype to that. But I mean, if your standard is the class of this year, no, the hype is underselling it probably, because you've got Mendoza and these other guys. And yes. 27, I think you've got it. But the potential, at least, of two or three franchise-altering quarterbacks in that class, maybe even a fourth one. So, yeah. But I don't know which ones they are today. I could give you names, but those will be wrong. It'll be some different names, as you know. We all thought a year ago this is going to be a great class, and it turned out not to be. But well, the NIL money ran out for some of these guys, so we will except Trinidad Chambliss, who apparently can stay in school forever. But anyway,
I can talk about that for 45 minutes, and we don't have the time for that. One known commodity we have, known quote unquote, is Dante Moore. He was gonna be battling Mendoza for the top of this class, and he's going back to Oregon for another year to fix a couple of things. So yes, like, Moore is going to be probably better than Mendoza next year. I know Mendoza had a crazy year, but Moore is more raw talent, better than Mendoza, I would say. Mendoza's a better player right now. But if Moore goes back to college for another year, he's going to be very good.
Yep.
On top of that, let's just throw the quarterbacks out for a second. There's two generational wide receivers coming, at least. One is Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson level. I'm willing to say that right now. Is Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams, who had a tough year because he had injuries, and Ty Simpson can't hit water out of a boat. He had a tough year. He's very, very good. Like, there's two generational wide receivers coming, and we haven't talked about Eric Singleton, who's a wide receiver at Florida, Julian Sayin, who could take another step forward at Ohio State and be another good quarterback. I'm just running down a mock right
Lenora
now.
Yeah, Lenora Sellers is somebody who could get back up on the board. He was high a couple of years ago, kind of fell off, had a bad year last year.
There's a guy named Arch Manning that no one's heard of that's coming.
Yeah, he's... Yeah, I don't never heard
some,
of him.
Some no-name guy.
He plays for Texas State, right?
Yeah, right. John Mateer was the Heisman for about a month before he got hurt. So he's a good quarterback. This will be a deeper quarterback class for sure. You can say what you want about the top, and we'll have 18 months basically to discuss it.
Yep, got a long time to talk about that.
So, there will be – it's going to be a deeper quarterback class. I'll tell you that right now, because there's not going to be just one quarterback next year. There almost can't be.
But to me, you had the question about Mendoza a moment ago, and it's like if a 27 first is part of a package that gets me off of the pick for Mendoza this year, that to me is worth taking, because I'd rather roll the dice with some of these other guys who have another year of college left to perform rather than Mendoza. And it's not so much – I don't like Mendoza. I do like him. I just don't think he's a franchise altering kind of quarterback. He to me is a decent QB2 in Superflex until he proves otherwise. And to me, that's I think there's several of those next year at the very least. So I would be willing to take that chance now versus Mendoza.
Also, I mentioned a lot of quarterbacks and wide receivers. There's also Ahmad Hardy, who's a dude and a half at Missouri at running back. So he will be very, very good. So there's a lot of people coming. All right. He says people, especially Frank, love the Atlanta B. Robinson RB joke. But seriously, that seems like a great landing spot if Bijan gets hurt. I'm not doing the top 10, Ari. I'm sorry. What are the top 10 backup running backs you'd like to? We're going to be here all day. You'd like to roster in case of injury to the lead dog, not committee guys, but guys who'd be top end clarified starters.
I mean, a lot of those are committee guys to me.
Yeah, like, they're committee guys until somebody gets hurt, and then they're not. Like Blake Corum would be one of those kinds of guys.
You right. Know, I was just kind of thinking about that.
I would kind of count on
Ray Davis.
Emmanuel Wilson. He may be the one for a while there in Seattle.
Yeah.
Davis. Menangai in Chicago.
Menangai's a good one.
Jordan Mason, maybe in Minnesota, although
he didn't do well with the opportunity he had last year.
So I probably would pass on that.
Brian Robinson is a good one, by the way. Brian Robinson. Yeah.
And I mean, again, they are committee backs, but if either Denver running back were to get hurt, I really like the other.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Saints running backs, I guess. But are you willing to bet on Kamara again if ETN goes down?
I mean, either Stevenson or Henderson in New England, whichever one. Yeah, that's another committee. If there's only one of them, it's a committee today, but it wouldn't be if one of those guys were to go down.
That's the thing. Other than like third stringers, there aren't really many clear backup running backs because there's not any clear workhorses that around the league, other than Bijan and like maybe Saquon and
McCaffrey.
McCaffrey, yeah.
But McCaffrey doesn't have a
I mean, he's got Jordan James, and then you've got Tyjae Spears in Tennessee would be another one I'd put on this pile.
Yeah,
not enthusiastically, but he is another one that would be the guy if Pollard or whoever they end up with it goes down. I got Pollard now.
I'm blanking on his name, but who is the guy who backs up Hampton in
Vidal?
Yeah,
Monty Vidal.
That's a good one.
Which he was good.
We watched it too. Yeah.
And they may have an offensive line this year, which would help.
The problem, and Jeff said it before. Yeah, Jeff said it before. There is no there's not that many true workhorses anymore. And the same thing that goes with that is there's not many true handcuffs anymore, right? This isn't the days where you took one guy who in the first round and you got his backup in the eighth round because you knew you had to do it. Like, this is those days are gone. So it stinks, but. Like, who is Jonathan Taylor's backup? Like, that's got to be one, but I feel like that's another committee. Like, it's just going to be Giddens and Abdullah and who cares? Like, it's just hard.
I don't think Abdullah's still there, is he?
Oh, I was looking at the stats from last year.
I think it's. I mean, my old depth chart here says some dude named Ulysses Bentley, who I honestly don't know who that is.
But he was at SMU, actually.
Oh, okay. There we go, Frank.
Got
your alma mater in there. That's good. So the fact that I don't know that is troublesome when it comes to
the backfield. Tyler Goodson.
One other answer for this question, Jonathan Brooks.
Yeah, or whatever rookie they draft.
Well, I mean, Trey Benson, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Someone asked me this today. Would you rather have Trey Benson or Ja'Cory Crosby-Barrett? I said neither.
That's what I was just going to say.
I see. What are my other options? Bill is healthy. I guess there's that. But...
Jeremiah loves going there. It sounds like
you made me pick one. Yeah, I'd say Bill.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want any of those guys. Thanks, though.
Yeah. Okay. Ari, we gave you a bunch of backups. There is no handcuffs. Yep. And you said not committee guys, which is funny because that's like an oxymoron. They're all committee guys now.
Yep.
All right. He said right now the Bears have 3 pass catchers in KTC's top 50. Is there any precedent for 3 beastly fantasy receiving options like that? I have one. I looked it up. What is the most likely outcome? 1, success. 2, is it possible that Ben and Caleb just spread the ball around so much that all 3 lose? We'll start with that.
I will say, though, by the way, with he's saying the beastly fantasy receiving options, and like, is there any precedent for that? I don't think when you see three top 50 guys, it necessarily means that's where they are supposed to finish by year's end or anything like that. Or like
the answer, by the way, the is odds the
of like the reason three guys get in the title is the odds of them succeeding more so than this guy's going to be the wide, you know, yes, the pass catcher 10, and this one's going to be 20, and this one's going to be 40. Yeah.
The answer was the 2013 Broncos with Decker, Demarius, and
but wasn't Julius that Thomas. Peyton's like record setting?
Peyton had like 70 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So
rising like, tides lifts all boats.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I tried to go back through kind of other teams, like the Bills never with Allen in all his years haven't had three. The Ravens haven't had three. The Chiefs haven't really had three. If you stacked all their other people together into one wide receiver, it probably would be three. But even when Mahomes was breaking records that Peyton set, like there weren't three people. So is there precedent? Yes. Is it consistent? No. So Jeff, let's go to that question. What's the most likely outcome? One success, two.
The most likely outcome is sadly that one of them won't make the whole season because of an injury and the other two will be just fine. So, I mean, one of the reasons that you don't see very many trios of pass catchers in near the top of the league is because rarely are trios of pass catchers healthy for an entire season that can produce at that level. So my expectation is that two of them are going to be just fine, and one of them will be fine when he's around, and hopefully they are all around, but that's kind of that. Also, though, of course, I look at it from a dynasty lens predominantly, and so to me, you can have three or four guys in the top 50 in that work because I'm not looking at this particular time frame. I mean, I looked at it before the show. I've got Loveland at tight end four in my rankings, and I believe I've got the two wide receivers in the top 24. I've got Burden at 20, and I've got Adunze at 14. So obviously that all can't happen in the same one season. So I'm hot on all three of those guys, but I also tend to rank on potential more than, you know, what I don't take the number of potential receptions of a team and divide it up among people and rank that way. I'm looking at what is this value of this player? What's their potential over the arc that they have? And all three of these guys are potential superstars, if not already. So they all coexist just fine in my worldview, but I can understand if this is if we're talking, you know, redraft or, you know, a high stakes best ball kind of situation. Well, best ball, you take all three of them, but you know, a redraft situation, all three of them are not probably going to be able to be successful for you at the same time. I would certainly, you know, be inclined to put I would put Loveland kind of as the one that's the surer of the three, just because that role is more consistent against the various defenses that go in this league. And even though Cole Kmet still exists, I don't see him as a serious threat to Loveland. So Loveland would be my choice of the three. And then it's really a matter of do you like the outside receiver or the slot receiver as your next guy. And we've seen slot receivers thrive in Ben Johnson's offense. We've also seen multiple tight end sets wipe slot receivers off the field. You can have a very successful slot receiver, but he's only out there 60% of the time. That's going to cap what he can do. So that may put, you know, a Denze next and then Burden at the bottom, but they could be in any order. That's just kind of if you told me I had to put him in an order, that's the order I'd put him in.
Yeah, I was going to go Frank as the resident Bears.
I'm doing some mathing right now.
It looks like it.
I'm trying to do. I know this is like how like guys like Keith Cummings and them do projections like that. So Caleb had 568 attempts last year, and if you kick his completion percentage from 58 to 63%, that's 358 completions. If you give 52 of those to the running backs, which they had last year, that's essentially 300 targets for these three guys. And none of them had more than nine. Rome led the team with 90 last year. There is target share available for all three of these guys to be successful without Caleb having to do much more than he did.
So that 352 was that targets or was that receptions?
That was receptions.
So that's 300 receptions. Oh,
completions. Yes, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So well, even better. So yeah. The targets are be more than that. So that's 300 completions to spread around to the
receivers. So yeah. See, I'm not a projection guy.
Some of which will go to ancillary
receivers. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, even if you cut that down, I mean, you're pretty happy. So I think there is a world where all of these guys can have success. I think there will be more than 1 week where you're sitting there pulling your hair out because you started Burden and he had 2 for 20 and Adunze went off and then you did the other thing. Just have all three of them. Just start all three of them every week and then you'll have someone do well, hopefully. Exactly. That'll be exciting.
Go ahead, Rocky. I agree with most of what you said. The only thing I was going to add is I think the most bang for your buck might be Adunze just because I think Colston Loveland's price is through the roof at this
point. He's Laporta right now, like a couple years ago.
Yep. Yeah. So, and he had the great playoff run and he had good regular season success. I don't even know that he was as good as Laporta. I would have to go back and look, but in terms of fantasy production, I mean, I don't know if he was even as good as Laporta was that rookie year. I could be wrong on that. So you're going to say something, Frank?
58 for 713 and 6 touchdowns. So
it took Loveland a little bit of a ramp up.
So he didn't
probably
start
did not hit Laporta's numbers. So Laporta kind of came out of the gates pretty hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's no guarantee he like improves on that necessarily. Like Laporta kind of tailed off. Like, not that he's been bad, but he hasn't really like blown up into the stratosphere or anything in terms of production. So that was just the other thing. I do like Adunze still. I do like Burden too, but Adunze to me is the better talent and I'll bank on that. And I do think he's not as highly priced as he once was. So I think he's the best guy value wise to go buy.
Yes. So what's your move in the receiver room? Whatever's the cheapest one, I guess. Whoever's the best value, like as Rocky said, if Burden's worth a first and Odunze's worth a first plus, get Burden. If it's the other way, do that. But I agree with Rocky. Loveland's probably too expensive right now. I think he's very hyped, probably for the right reasons, because I do think he's more talented than Laporta, raw talent. But we'll just have to see. Okay, how do you weigh stability versus upside? Asking because I recently got Chuck for Darnold. Well done. Worried the Seattle offense reverts with worse run game, no Kubiak. And even with these things, Darnold was only above average for fantasy. Crazy to prefer the upside of Chuck in a Kellen Moore offense. Jeff?
You know, upside and Chuck are not words I typically put together. So I don't know. I don't know how much upside there is in that offense. I agree that Darnold is fickle and has had a couple of really great seasons and had a bunch of not great seasons. And so if you want to put him in the, you know, above average, that's a good spot for him. But I don't know.
Can I give you a better example to
help?
Purdy and Dart. Purdy is stable and Dart is upside. So now how do you weigh that kind of stability versus Dart could fall off a cliff or Dart could be a top
eight? Well, I think, QB? You know, honestly, if we're looking at Superflex, I would love one of each, right? I'd like a stable floor, high floor kind of guy who I can always count on for, you know, 20 to 24 to 27 points, depending on what your scoring system is going to look like. And then have a guy who could just literally go off, but who I risk getting only 6 or 7 points from sometimes because those can kind of balance each other out. So, you know, if I were looking at that with this deal, I would, to me, Shuck or Darnold is the stability guy. I don't think either of them is the upside guy. So I don't know that one for the other is the way I would necessarily want to look at that. Now, I'm willing to be convinced that Shuck has more upside. Certainly in a dynasty standpoint, does, because Shuck is at least 1 year younger than Darnold is. I mean, Shuck's pretty old for a second year guy, but he's not, he's not an ancient guy. So maybe in a longer term arc, Shuck's got that. And New Orleans, surely at some point is going to be an ascending offense because they will get out of this cap hell they put themselves in. At some point in Seattle. So, but yeah, in Superflex, I love to have, I'm being repetitive, I love to have one of each. I love to have that nice stable guy, and I love to have a guy I could pop off. If you have two of one and none of the other, you're either kind of at this sort of flat floor you're always going to have, in which case you need your opponent's guys to not do as well as they could to win, or you need both your guys to pop off at the same time. And either of those is a much harder combination than just having a floor and a ceiling together.
I could not agree with that point more of having one of each, but yeah. Rocky, go ahead.
One thing with this specific trade, I will say Shuck might not have a lot of like big time upside, long-term upside maybe, but I was looking at last year and he has one less 20-point fantasy game than Sam Darnold, and he did not start until week 8. Yeah. So he has more week-to-week upside, that's for sure.
100%.
By the way, Darnold ran the ball well.
Yeah.
Darnold didn't have to do a lot.
Yeah. I said it in the question. I would trade Darnold for Shuck right now, one for one, if that was offered to me.
Yeah, and Darnold is the example of stability is like exactly what I don't want. So I don't care if you're going to be there for 3 years or guaranteed or whatever, like if you stink. So, I mean, not that he stinks in real life, but as a fantasy option.
Just won a Super Bowl, Rocky. Come on.
I'm talking fantasy. He's a fine enough, obviously, NFL quarterback, but for fantasy, I don't want to be starting Sam Darnold. So, yeah, I'll generally lean upside over stability, especially if we're talking that kind of stability. Like, if it's just, like, he's going to be around for a while and the other guy may not be but has more potential scoring ability, I'll go for that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I never wanted Geno Smith, who was, you know, a couple of years ago because he was going to be around for a little bit, like, and maybe I don't have somebody to compare him to. But that kind of guy just does nothing for me.
I'm semi-serious when I say this. Everyone hold your Seahawks for August because the Hard Knocks bump is a thing. Yep. People love watching Hard Knocks and say, like, I want that guy on my team now. And there will be people who the Seahawks were announced for Hard Knocks today. And if there will be people who watch the Hard Knocks show in August and get excited. So I'm half joking, but.
I've never watched a full season of Hard Knocks ever.
So Emmanuel Wilson may be the most highly sought after running back about 3 weeks into that series.
Yep.
Or George Halani, who no one will have heard of until then.
Yes. He sent us a team. I know we're later in the show, so we don't have to do this, but I mean,
I think we maybe save this for another.
All right. We'll circle back to this next week, but he said, how much did you use PFF grades, and with the changes at PFF, do you have any idea what you'll replace that input with moving forward? First off, all the stuff that's happening at PFF is very sad. It's happening at a lot of places. I never used PFF grades. I'm sorry. I just never did.
I don't even like PFF, so yeah, me either.
But that doesn't mean that Rocky and I don't fully support and feel for everyone who's going through at PFF. That's very sad, and obviously there's a lot of people out there who have gone through a bunch of that over the last couple of months. But Jeff, did you use PFF in any of your stuff?
I do. I do not use them for positional players like quarterbacks or running backs, because I think I've got a good enough grasp on that. But I have used the PFF's grades for offensive line and for linemen and for understanding those kinds of combinations. And so I did cancel my subscription today after all the layoffs yesterday. I'm sure they won't miss my $80 or $90 or whatever it is, but I don't see a need to support that. I'll direct that money toward other content creators. But in terms of the direct replacement for that use of PFF for offensive line, I don't know what that is, but I did just break up with them today, so I haven't given enough thought.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's the end of our show sheet. So that's going to be end of our show. Thank you, Jeff, for coming on. It was a fun show having you. Before we head out, why don't you remind everyone who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do?
Yep, Jeff Blaylock, the other Jeff B from Football Guys, where you'll find me. I do dynasty rankings, dynasty projections, and dynasty content. I also have a podcast called Dynasty Compass. Episodes coming out weekly on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and wherever fine podcasts are streamed.
Yes. Our stuff, patreon.com/TreyXPod. You can watch us while we record. You can see Jeff's beautiful Roadrunner, I'm guessing, is what that is in the background.
That is what that is, yes.
Yes, and a TCU Horn Frog and a Scott Fish helmet and all sorts of other things that he's got going on back there. We also have our Discord chat, the Quill Kids Club. There's been lots of kind of trade discussions going on in there. And, of course, the most important thing is Fantasy Cares. Zach Reed's rookie report is up. I posted the link in our tweet about the show last week, but I'll repost that. And then on the shows, Dynasty Hootenanny is on Thursday nights, Trivia is Tuesday nights, which I won tonight. Haha. Go Super Mario. And there's the Wednesday night hangout on Wednesdays. And I think that is all we have. So as Rester Sher always told us, if you have a trading problem, you're never alone. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Frank.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLS family of podcasts, and a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FS Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy pants.
Daddy's the best.
See ya.